Happy Wednesday to everyone.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, CK.
Good morning.
Good morning has become one word.
Yes.
Good morning. Two words.
Two words.
This is episode, where, what are we up to? 243.
Whew.
Game over.
I was thinking after our episode on Monday, I was thinking that we just didn't give enough props to 242. Now, that's a cool number, right? Because there's two on either side, and 2 + 2 = 4.
So when I look at it,
it's a very neat symmetrical number.
I feel like it's twos. There's two twos. When they're together, it's a four. So the four, right, is their car. So the twos get into the four, and they drive
there around. There you go, and they drive up. And then 243, right? We have 234, but kind of mixed up a little bit.
Yeah, it's subverting sequence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good morning, Catherine.
Oh, hey, I got a great robot bird story.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So on Saturday, I was planting my garlic, and as one does in the fall. And, it's right next to the fence and in the backyard. And one of these little robots, like, flew right into the grapevines right next to me and, like, started chirping at me. I was like, oh, my gosh, it's sending me some kind of message that I can't understand. Either that or it's broadcasting what I'm doing.
Yeah, you don't know. And, like, it could be saying, I'm part of a faction of robot birds that's pro-human, and I'm here to tell you some news. Okay. Tell the human leaders.
Run.
Stop something. Run. Or it's like, this guy's planting garlic. Abort mission.
Yeah.
Because robot birds are in league with vampires.
Could be. So I just said hi to it, and it sent out my data, and that was it.
Oh, shit. I just realized something.
What?
So assuming the robot birds are in control of a lot of things,
mm-hmm,
it's without question at this point.
Obvious.
I'm assuming they also either have been long established because it's ancient alien technology, or they have time travel capacity because all these, ooh, pictures with St. Francis and the birds.
Yeah.
I need to re-examine the Franciscan shit. This changes everything.
Maybe Francis was the alien that brought robot birds.
Maybe it's like, robot lord, make me an instrument of your peace. That's kind of
where,
like,
there is hatred, may I sow information. Or something.
Okay, so a couple comments that are happy Wednesday. 243 is a 9 numerology wise, but 242 was my travel group to China for my youngest. You look great. I'm glad you met an Antifa
bird.
Cardinal. Was it a cardinal?
No, it's a robot bird. It's a little bird.
But this picture looks like a cardinal. I just want to know how accurate it is. It's hard to tell with these little emojis. And Ellen says, dang it, a classmate was telling me a beautiful story about birds yesterday, and I had to keep myself from saying right. We like to ruin people's lives by
interesting names,
impossible to avoid.
All right. We're way off track.
Okay. So let me segue this way.
Okay.
I posited that the birds are working with the vampires, and before this, we were talking about different tropes of the wealthy, the people who are have so much abundance that they lose touch with regular struggles. And so, like, whether it's noble people at Versailles, like, eating luxurious peacock steaks while, like, they have, you know, slaves, like, murdering each other for their entertainment,
right,
or vampires, like, it's a common vampire trope. of like, yeah. I'm immortal and I have everything I need, so I'm going to engage in the most wanton debauchery. And this, you know, this ties in a little bit, you know, just to the, like, what does winning even look like? I mean, this is what all these sorts of satires of excess kind of deal with, is even if we got what we wanted, is that the point? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the game that we're trying to play here in this Squid Game world? That's my segue. How did I?
There we go. That was pretty good.
I mean, it's early for me.
So. Yeah. Well, and I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct Mike of the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
And I'm Ash Vantunuk. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
Yeah, and this week we're kind of riffing off of this new series, The Squid Games, which is pretty terrifying and painful. And one of the things that we wanted to get to today was there's a whole embodiment theme going on in the Squid Games. And again, we're trying not to have too many spoilers, but basically it's commodification of bodies. And it's amazing, you know, again, how much this is not fiction, right? I mean, this is going on all the time. And in fact, after our episode on Monday, Ash, you got off of this and got on Facebook, and an ad popped up for selling your plasma, right?
Yeah.
You shared with me. And this is something that in healthcare education, it's actually really common for medical students and nursing students to sell their bodily fluids while they're in school, or to participate in drug trials while they're in school, you know, for money to pay for their school. And, you know, because they're at these healthcare institutions, and so they're nearby, you know, doctors and labs and all this kind of stuff, they get advertised to. And so this entire idea that, oh, well, there are some humans and they're poor, and so what we can do is we can just harvest them, and that's an acceptable way to engage society and to engage each other. You know, this is a really intense form of commodification.
Well, this is, you know, fascinating to think about. Bodies and capitalism, because like it is about commoditization of bodies. It's but we get tricked into thinking it's not. I mean, there's this meme that's been circulating for years now. I think it's a U of M scholar, University of Minnesota, not Michigan. The better U of M, not that shitty one. I don't know. I don't care it actually at all. But the Minnesota's U of M. Who will say, like, you know, all these people who get down on sex work, saying like the reason we think of sex work as selling one's body but not mining shows more about our puritanical values than it does about understanding of like who's selling bodies. Well, any laborer at some level is selling their body. Mm-hmm. It's just to do what? And I don't want to like minimize like. There's a lot of problems with sex work, especially when it comes to abuse and lack of protections and things like that. And I don't want to like say, hey, sex work is just great. Like, that's not my point either. But no. The idea that somehow other people don't sell their bodies. Like, I remember I've had all sorts of shit jobs.
I mean, mining isn't great either.
No, mining is horrible. Like, I had a job. I've had jobs that were not good for my body. Like, when I was like, I don't know, 12 or 13, I got a job picking rocks. Because, you know, farmers, there's big rocks in the field, like you got to get them out of the field. And so you get these kids, you pay them like $2 an hour or some shit. And then my hands were bloody as a little kid. Yeah. That's not good.
And you mentioned the Chernobyl show, I think, on Monday. And you know, there are some incredible scenes in there, all the stuff that they did to try to clean the place up. And you talk about sacrificing bodies. I mean, sure. it was unbelievable. Yeah, and so that's, you know, that's happening all the time, and the disposable nature of people in our embodiment is just a very, very I think powerful thing to examine and to pay attention to.
Well, and we're even taught to valorize it. So, you know, it's not like I'm not some sort of like working class, like rough-handed person. So the fact that I actually have a bad back from working in education that wasn't taken care of, like, because I was an educational assistant where I had a one-on-one kid who was squirming and I was trying to get him out of a dangerous situation. I threw my back out. Or, you know, like I had a job where I was separating turkeys from crushing each other to death because turkeys are dumb, and it knocked me out for a day from all the ammonia fumes. These are like, I'm a regular kind of educated, like white collar type person who's had these kinds of jobs. Even though I don't get paid a lot, I'm still kind of in that. There's all kinds of jobs that regular people every day take that take a toll, and then there's no benefit for them at the end. And we are taught that somehow sucking it up, persevering, and say, yeah, I threw my back out, I have a bum back from blah, blah, blah. Like that, somehow that's a badge of honor. We get prestige from that in a weird way. And we don't question. So like, and then we watch a show like Squid Game, like they're fucking selling their kidneys. I don't know if that happens because I haven't watched that far. Like in order to get an advantage in this game, those idiots, I'm like, we do that shit all the time.
Yeah. Well, and one great local example of this, a friend of ours, Joe Cruz, who works over at this co-op, and there's been all this stuff going on about, you know, is it okay for cashiers to sit down during their shift? Which I just find, I mean, the fact that this is even like this heated debate, I find to be fairly revolting. I mean, what's the problem? Right? Like, what's the problem with cashiers being able to have a seat to sit down? I mean, you can scan stuff and punch a cash register and still sit down every once in a while. But this has become this big heated thing, and management doesn't want these people to sit down. And it's been this big controversy. And, you know, and to be clear, once you're a material being and you do stuff in the material world, you know, you have problems, right, with your body. I mean, I've had back problems my whole adult life, and that's just part of being a material being, and people get sick, and people have all kinds of embodied issues. And so the point is not, oh, gee, nobody should ever get hurt being a material being. I mean, that's pretty much impossible. But the question is, how are we relating to people when they have these kinds of problems? And are we just seeing somebody as a commodity where it's like, oh, yeah, well, I can just throw a bunch of bodies at the problem. Or I can, I'm a billionaire, I'm bored. So yeah, let's just watch people kill each other and then we can harvest their organs at the end of the game. And that's okay. Right. So it gets back to this issue of, are we seeing each other as human beings, or are we seeing each other just as another thing in the world that I can buy and sell and use in different ways?
A few comments here. CK writes, the vampire groundfinch is a small bird native to the Galapagos Islands. This is where everything comes.
Okay. Everything comes together.
Yes.
There we go.
The apotheosis of these two.
The vampires, the robots, evolution.
It makes all kinds of
islands,
sense.
Islands, everything.
Basically, the Galapagos Islands is the Wakanda for robot birds.
Ooh.
It's where they have their hidden robot bird civilization, and it makes sense. Darwin has been trying to warn us, and we just couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. We got distracted by those giant turtles there.
Yeah, and the Komodo dragons.
Right.
Ellen writes, public education was controversial, especially kindergarten, because school was seen as taking kids/labor out of the easily exploitable workforce.
right? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we forget that it hasn't been that long since, you know, child labor was seen as perfectly fine and normal. And, you know, and I was talking with Gregory, who been on the show, was watching on Monday about this a while back, you know, in terms of the labor movement in the United States and people being down in the labor movement. I mean, you know, do we want to go back to 9-year-olds working 12-hour days in a sweatshop? I mean, the fact that that doesn't happen was created by the labor movement. But yeah, I mean, all that used to just be perfectly normal.
Michael writes, cashiers at grocery stores are allowed to sit in the UK. Yeah. You know, and it's like, I don't think my sense of why they don't want this to happen is because slouchy looking people look less professional than rigid looking people. I think that's pretty much it.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It's just, seems less professional.
Oh yeah, because that's what I'm thinking as I go through the grocery aisle. Does this cashier look professional?
I just don't want them cussing at me and being a snot. That's all I really care about with cashiers. Like, they have to do their job. Like, I don't expect nice. I don't even expect nice. It's like, why should they have to kiss my ass just because I'm buying like carrots? Like, just don't be a dick. I don't care if you're sitting. Like,
oh my god,
it's just weird. Like, incredible. There's all kinds of stuff. grocery stores, any service industry job. There's all kinds of weird shit to deal with. Ellen writes, I know an ANCAP friend. That's for those not in the know. God bless you. You shouldn't have to know about this shit. ANCAPs, anarcho-capitalists, people that are like libertarian plus. Unlike most every other anarchist, which is a form of socialism that's anti-authoritarian. There you go. I have an ANCAP friend who has a small business that is quite dangerous, who excitedly told me about how he gamified not getting hurt at work.
Okay.
It's just kind of like the sophisticated version of, it's been 63 days since the workplace injury thing's on the wall. It's like, if we make it to 90, everyone gets cake. It's so messed up. Is this true? This is amazing. It's the small evolutionary jumps because of the lack of fresh water, so they drink the blood of other birds.
Okay, now you're just making shit up.
I mean, how do robot birds have, like...
First of all, robot birds don't have blood.
They do have, that's the first problem. Maybe they have charging fluid. Maybe they have some sort of liquid battery system that processes.
Or some oil flowing through.
It's different kinds of, like, maintenance liquids that... beneficial to have an excess supply of, and so they cannibalize each other when one is deemed as weak. That's what Darwin was writing about. Ellen writes, I think the reward for not getting hurt meant you don't have to clean the bathroom, a shared chore. Jesus Christ.
Okay.
No, here's the thing, like, to me that's horrible. This is like, but I know, like, I'm channeling my younger self, like, it's toughen up. Like, there's so much of this sort of, especially in masculine, toxic masculine culture of, like, just suck it up and suffer. Look at my hand. I only have 3 fingers because I cut 2 of them off with a bandsaw. You don't see me complaining.
That's right.
So what if it's harder to wipe my ass? I had someone tell me that once.
That was their big loss from losing their fingers. They couldn't wipe their ass as well. I can think of some other things that would be a problem with losing
fingers. Yeah, there's other things that I'm like...
That wouldn't be
before computers were really prolific, but I imagine typing is harder, you know. So that, but yes, that the wiping your ass, for some reason, that was this the anecdote he would share.
Okay.
Susan writes, it's all about appearances, Ash, the stand at all times, ridiculous and arbitrary. Yeah, it's to look all crisp and tucked in looking. Yeah,
that's amazing. I just never would have thought of that.
Ellen writes, he was dismayed when I reacted by saying I would walk out of a job if that policy was announced.
Well, and so that brings up something interesting, Ellen. I mean, that is starting to happen more and more You know, and I think this is also a big issue that the Squid Games is highlighting, which is this kind of hopelessness that people start to feel in this capitalist world. And that runs as a theme throughout the show, right? Is that, like, what keeps these people here? What keeps them in the game, right? And it's basically this incredible overriding sense of despair. Mm-hmm. That they feel out in the world. And, you know, they keep sort of saying, well, basically the game isn't any different than their lives. And one of the things that I'm really seeing is this very hopeful thing. And again, people have been sharing, you know, some of them text messages. There have been a few great videos about this. You know, it's basically workers just saying, fuck it, I quit. Like, and quitting in great dramatic fashion. There's this great video of this woman that works in Walmart that, you know, quit over the PA system and filmed it. It's really terrific. And that people are really beginning to recognize that, all right, if where we're heading is, you know, towards the Matrix, right, where we're just all like lying comatose in some box being plugged in to, you know, the grid and our tiny amount of electricity being used to maintain reality. If that's where we're headed, well, we might as well rebel, right? We might as well at least try something else. Like, before we go down, we might as well at least try something. And
did the Matrix not teach us anything?
That's right. And you know, I said this. This was something that got shared yesterday, and you know, I had no idea that this was going on. But another friend of ours, Anthony Moss, who, you know, often would listen when he wasn't. Now he's back in school, so he can't during the day. But you know, he shared this thing about how now people who are taking these standardized tests on computers, there's this software that tracks your eye movements. And then if you like look too many times in the wrong direction, they flag you for cheating. Which interestingly for myself as a neuroatypical person that looks sideways and off in the distance all the time, I'm like, okay, well, I'd be busted with this stuff. But, you know, I think that, and the article was about how some people are starting to rebel against this. And they're like, no, I'm not going to take these tests, or I'm not going to use this software. And, you know, and I think that more and more people hopefully are and will be moving in this direction. Because I think if we don't, it's pretty clear where this is all headed, right? And this is where, you know, one of the things I started off with on Monday about watching the Squid Games is it doesn't seem that odd. Like, it doesn't seem really far off or weird, you know, that, like, if somebody said, oh yeah, we actually found a place where this was already going on, I'd be like, well, that doesn't surprise me at all. And so yeah, if all of these jobs in our lives are moving towards, okay, I'm going to be biomonitored. I'm going to be, you know, tracked when I pee. I'm going to be tracked when I look sideways. You know, I'm going to be told that I can't sit down when my back or my feet is killing me. Well, fuck it. I need to find healthy communities to try to do something different. Because this is heading in a direction of complete dehumanization.
Well, and think about all the ways that we're conditioned to kind of accept this more. So we're already surveyed. We can already get benefits based on, like, benefits.
Especially
or demerits
if we're vaccinated against COVID.
Yeah. And, well, we're being surveyed, yes. And the 5G comes in handy for medical processing. There's already like incentives and benefits and like things that are kind of tied in. So it's already gamified. And then, like growing up, you know, I had a job where they had 50 hour a week mandatory overtime, and it conflicted with my priorities because I worked at a church a little bit on the side. And so I quit, and I remember getting so much shit, like not from my spouse or anybody who was really close to me, but generally it's like, you selfish bastard. Why would you quit a job because they make you work 50 hours a week? I'm like, I don't have 50 hours a week to give to this job. And it was seen as being selfish. And this was in the 90s, which was still like a good time to quit a job and get a different job comparatively. And we're seeing that now. And it's amazing. You're seeing the ratcheting up of all lazy millennials and Gen Z. They're a bunch of like avocado toast eating losers. They complain. And like back in my day, we would like slice off an arm before we quit work. We were tough. Like that kind of bullshit way of thinking.
Yeah.
And then, you know, everything is appified. And like all the Sorry to Bother You movie. Remember that movie with Boots Riley came out with where they had this whole satire of them living in warehouse. Living, we're seeing that happening.
Yeah.
Seeing all these things happening. And it's like, it's just in 20 years, if things go on this trajectory, things maybe not as overt as Squid Games, but a lot of the stuff that we see in these post-apocalyptic films will become reality. Like, I remember there were times in my life, I remember when I was in a crunch for money, and I remember looking up how to sell my body to science when I die, because, you know, back in the day, you could sign away your body and you get money in the here and now. Well, they don't do that anymore. So you don't get money for sliding over your dead body. And so then I looked into medical stuff, like all these things. I get ads for medical testing. Are you between the age of 35 and 50? Are you healthy and not smoker? You get these things.
You see it on the bus all the time. We got a lot of comments. We're behind in our comments.
We're falling behind.
Yep.
Let's see. Getting back
to
here we go. This is it. Who didn't have a shop teacher who's missing a finger and tell you if you work hard in life, that's what happens?
Yeah, well, yeah, there are a lot of those.
It's like never trust a fingerless shop teacher, never trust a bald barber or a skinny chef. Susan writes, so the Great Resignation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and to me, it's funny how some people see this as bad. I'm like, that's the only leverage workers have.
Yeah,
most of the time. So like, this is great. Ellen writes, I've been downwardly mobile before, so I can be content with sleeping on rocks. I don't think I could be content with that.
But, you got to pick the rocks first and then sleep on the ground.
But with a kid, working at Costco might have more OSHA protection than my friend's tiny business. This is the other thing, is like, small businesses aren't necessarily better than big ones.
No.
I mean, they might be easier to organize, but still. Just the capitalist shit happens at all sizes. LinkedIn, CK says, LinkedIn did a survey and found that people are quitting their jobs to find better jobs. For sure. Totally. Yeah. Like, it's funny, I'll talk to people and they'll be like, well, I hate this job and I got this other job, but I don't want to leave them because I'm like, you don't owe anything to your employer.
Yeah. But that's a very, very powerful internalized mechanism of control. Yeah.
It's funny that even as employers are less and less loyal to workers, workers feel like guilt. It doesn't usually work the other way around. Ellen writes, wow, those tests must not want to help neurodivergent folks advance in their education at all.
Yeah, no, they're incredibly ableist.
It's messed up. Sherrod writes, one of the weirdest pressures for pastors is to translate their vocation as something where productivity is measurable. Fuck yes. That drives me nuts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The tracking of everything is all a function of productivity over everything.
Yep. No, and that's been an enormous issue in ministry, which, you know, basically is organized around capitalist principles and, and so churches have all these things where they're trying to track whether or not their pastors are competent by everything going up, everything increasing. The Methodist church actually created this thing called a dashboard, which was this computer thing that, you know, every week you had to put in, you know, what was your giving, what was your attendance, what was your Sunday school attendance, did you have any baptisms? And then that was sent into Central Methodist headquarters. So then they could tell, like, are you a good pastor? Are your numbers going up? It's a complete sellout of the church to the capitalist marketplace.
Bottom line, CK writes, we have had less people applying for college than we have since 1972.
Interesting statistic. Yeah. I thought it was a lot more, but that's interesting.
Yeah, if not that I doubt you, but if you can put a link so I can look that up, because that's fascinating to me.
Yeah. That'd
be great. Ellen writes, are you aware of the movement of workers who tally being paid to poop? They protest their work by taking as much bathroom break as they can get away with. Some of them really push it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a big thing, and there's a big thing in Amazon. All right, let's move on. Now, poop jokes.
Just wipe out the competition. Yeah. We could keep on saying, but I don't want to get on a roll. So this Rex hustle culture started in the 90s with the yuppies.
Yeah,
it's definitely interesting watching how, you know, that sort of 80s entrepreneurial spirit thing take over, and then there was the bubble. It's been fascinating watching all this and how much it shapes our imaginations. Sherrod writes, how the fuck are spiritual communities even possible if they can't escape the pressures of productivity and sustainability? I mean, this is fascinating. And part of it's because of what becomes normalized. So like different communities in particular, I know, like white immigrant communities, this is true, has been true in the past, but then also, you know, more recent groups. And you see this with early Mennonites, they didn't have a professionalized ministry at all.
Right.
And it's like, I think workers should be paid well. And if you're going to seminary, working for a denomination, get a job, you deserve to be paid well. Yes. But we don't need paid professional staff or to do church. And for most of history, we haven't really had much of that. Not really.
No. So but it's I think, and this is maybe something we can take up on Friday and weave into fascism and bigger political systems. One of the things, though, that does bring up is the issue of where are you putting your resources? And this is something actually after our broadcast on Monday, Gregory and I were talking about this because he was listening in and commenting. Because one of the things that's very notable to me in the Squid Games, I've been thinking a lot about this, is that it is very clear that whoever has set this whole thing up, and I haven't watched till the end, so I don't know if it gets revealed who it is, but
it's a squid.
Yeah, well, yeah, no,
it's in the title.
Whoever has set this up has poured a huge number of resources into this, right? They have committed a lot of money, a lot of energy into this. And I think that this is one of the real challenges that we see in terms of creating alternatives and alternative communities. And we certainly see it in the church, is that people rarely want to put lots of resources into alternatives. Right. And I mean, we can rip on, you know, Bezos and all these guys all we want. But the fact is that they've put billions and billions of dollars into their vision of reality and into what they want. Right. They're putting their money where their mouth is. And if you look at most churches and you ask them, you know, for an extra $20 to do something cool, they'll say no. Right. And they may have tons of money in the bank, and they are not willing to put their money into alternative ways of doing things, into supporting other kinds of interactions around property or people or, you know. And I used to talk about this all the time. I did a lot of work at mainline camps, and you go to a mainline church camp, and it looks like shit. I mean, I went to one place in Michigan where they were still using those green army surplus tents, like from the Korean War, to house people.
Wow.
You know, and you go to one of these fundy camps, and they got like nice places, and they put a lot of money into this. And so anyway, I think, you know, I'd love to take this up a little more on Friday, but the question of what are we willing to put into a different vision of reality, I think, is a really important issue.
Ellen writes, someone in my family is missing multiple fingers from ignoring safety procedures to meet ridiculously tight deadlines for the ultra rich. i.e. building 16,000 square feet house.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be flippant about maiming oneself at work. Like, maybe it seems like I'm being too lighthearted about this. You know, we've been joking, but part of the absurdity is I've known a number of people who've lost appendages or things, and they kind of will wear it as though it's a sign of their hard work and sacrifice.
Right.
And that's sad. It's like it's people coming back from military and like who bear different kinds of scars who are proud of it. But then it's like the sad reality is like, we didn't need to be in Afghanistan. Like, who are we serving?
Right. Yeah.
And the fact that this has turned into individual piety, kind of morality, like a badge, like that's just, we're being duped.
Okay. CK,
it was on NPR yesterday about college decline. Last couple comments here. Ellen writes, in the words of St. Paul, quoting Deuteronomy, even the ox treading out the grain is fed. Yes, if we're expecting certain kinds of work to be done on our behalf, we should pay the person for it, make sure they're compensated, for sure. And not in a stingy way. Ellen writes, when the lady challenges Jesus by saying, even the dogs under the table get crumbs, is this an economic challenge? We should heal those outside our group.
Yes, I think it is. Absolutely.
I feel like table metaphors are almost always economic. That's a great question. Oh, last comment from Susan. They can work those Green Army tent accommodations into the church camp spiritual experience of fasting from creature comforts and self-flagellation.
There we go.
Yeah, you got to feel worse about yourself. Otherwise, it's not a Christian camp.
All right. Well, thank you all for being with us and for your comments and discussion. And we will be back on Friday.
See you Friday.
Everybody's favorite day.